Hey folks, you're listening to the LifeScan Learning Lab edition of the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie and Chief Todd LaDuke, episode 97.
Welcome to the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
All right, Todd, let's go ahead and kick this one off. And if you'd like, go ahead and give a nice introduction to our guest and let you take it from there.
Sounds great. Thanks, Donnie. And hard to believe we're plugging away here where we're taping this February 1st, actually. So we've got 1 month of 2022 behind us and looking forward to a great year of episodes. So I'm thrilled today with our guest, and I know it's going to be a great episode. So a friend, a colleague for a long time, actually my golf foursome partner on the golf course, which is always dangerous golfing with me, but he's survived. And that's retired Suffolk County, New York Fire Commissioner Dave Fischler. So Dave, welcome to the LifeScan Learning Lab edition of the Get Balanced podcast with myself and Dr. Donnie, and thanks for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to this. You do important work. I know you've done important work your whole career, Todd, with Broward County and then also with the International Association of Fire Chiefs. So we're lucky to have you moderating this.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate those kind words. And why don't we start by, I know before we started taping, Dr. Donnie was kind of talking about our audience, and you know, we've got hundreds of listeners with every episode, mostly in the States, but we do also have some international listeners to the show. So Dave, why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit about your background? And I kind of let the cat out of the bag with the introduction, but why don't you tell us how you get into the fire service and about your journey? And I know you've had quite a journey. So if you would share that with our audience.
True. I come from a fire service family. My father became a volunteer firefighter in our local community. He was the local physician, became a volunteer firefighter in 1943. So my brother and myself both grew up seeing him going out the door, going to fires. And and we would jump in the car just to ride along as he responded. So when at 18 years old, when I could join, I joined the local volunteer fire department, as well as my brother joined 3 years later when he was 18. So we both started as volunteers and just had a passion for it. We saw the camaraderie that occurred within the volunteer fire service, the challenges that the firefighters had, both mentally and physically, in doing their work. And so we both joined. There, I went on to college. I received a bachelor's in biology. And then I also received subsequently another master's degree in biology and another master's degree in health education. During that time, I also became a paramedic. I was in the second paramedic class in New York City, and I worked for Catholic Medical Center during those years in the mid-70s. I had the opportunity in 1976, I had evidently moved up the ranks of the volunteer fire service. So in 1976, I was an outgoing captain of my company and then became an assistant chief in my volunteer department. In 1977, I had the opportunity to go to work for Suffolk County, New York Fire Rescue. And I was there for 28 plus years. During that time, I progressed through different ranks. And the two key ranks that I held was for 10 years, Chief Fire Marshal, which was a promotion tested position. And then I was appointed by our county executive to be the Commissioner of Suffolk County, New York Fire Rescue and Emergency Services, which also meant I also wore the hat of the County Emergency Manager. During my time in that position, we did a lot of things that I was involved in. We had the 1995 wildfires, where we had I had overall command, and then in 1996 I had overall command. Initially, through until we went into a recovery effort of the Flight 800 TWA Flight 800 crash off Long Island, where 230 souls were. Died in that explosion. And obviously, 9/11 came about. I was heavily involved with the UASI group, the UASI New York UASI area, and was prior to 9/11 was the chairman of the subcommittee on mutual aid for fire, police, EMS, emergency management. There, 9/11. Was able to help coordinate the resources for fire, EMS, and police that moved into New York City. And later on, our emergency management people, and we were there supporting that effort 24/7 for approximately 6 weeks. I still maintain my membership in the Volunteer Fire Department. Obviously, I'm not active anymore. I've been living in Florida. It's hard to make the first due truck going out the door from Florida to New York, but I still remain active where I can with the St. James Fire Department.
Well, and Dave, you have a brother, right? That was he active FDNY or he's retired from FDNY? A little FDNY in the family as well,
yep.
Right?
Yep. But let me just backtrack. The other thing I did is during my year career, I did become an attorney, and as you previously mentioned, I work. I'm a of counsel to a firm of Hanson and Rosasco in New York. And we handle the 9/11 cases under the Zagroder Act through the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and Shanksville. That's very challenging because there's just so many people who are ill from their exposures. In terms of my brother, he said he's a volunteer. He's still an active volunteer. He lives in still in the community. He has 52 years of service as a volunteer. In 1977, he joined FDNY. He was assigned to Ladder Company 26 in Harlem, better known as the Fire Factory, Ladder 26 and Engine 58. When he got promoted, he bounced a little, but then ended up being Lieutenant of Rescue 1 in Midtown Manhattan. Thereafter, he worked in rescue services in the initial citywide unit of responding, supervising rescue operations. Then he became captain of Rescue 2 in Brooklyn, and thereafter chief in the 8th Battalion, which is Midtown Manhattan, covering the UN, Rockefeller Center, St. Pat's Cathedral, the embassies, and so on. And then on 9/11, he was involved in the Tower 1 collapse. Survived it, and then went back and worked within rescue operations so that they could get bring the rescue units, the equipment, and the personnel up to speed to replace the members that were lost that day.
Definitely got a legacy of fire service in the family, and you know, that's once it's in the blood, right? That becomes not just tradition, but a part of who we are. So, thanks to your entire family for their service. You know, I wanted to touch on briefly. You know, you mentioned the 9/11 work that you do for folks that are to this day we're still losing members of the service from 9/11 associated disease. And I recall, you know, it seems like every so often with the Zagota Act, there's this back and forth about it being funded. And has that issue been resolved, to making sure that there's that permanent support for as long as we have people that are suffering from illnesses from 9/11?
All right. The most recent legislation extended that to 2090. And some people say, why so long? I mean, what, you know, who are you trying to, you know, who's trying to get this money? Remembering that we had preschools and elementary schools one block from the World Trade Center, and those kids that day were exposed. So we do not know what the long-term effects will be as they mature and get older. Will they come down with any of the cancers? What will be the extent of the disease process? We know that the CDC has, Center for Disease Control in the United States, has classified almost 70 cancers that are more prevalent in the 9/11 population than in the general population. And some of them are really like oddball cancers. Therefore, we need to continue to look at that. And that legislation allows for continued funding. Obviously, it isn't funded through all those years, but on a periodic basis, you know, more money is requested. But they did move it out to 2090.
That's certainly reassuring to know. I know, I can't remember what year it was, being on the steps of the Capitol for a press conference, and IFC was there, IFF was there, and you know, it just seems like something that we need to be mindful. As you said, the effects are probably many of them we don't even know. Like you mentioned, you may not know for some time that we're taking care of our folks that were there. So thanks for the work that you do in that venue as well.
Hey, Todd, if I could just,
sure,
just jump in real quick, Dave. I mean, what a career. I mean, you know, and everything that you've been doing. And if I understood you correctly, you got a undergrad in bio, master's in bio, and somewhere along the line, you went and got your law degree.
Right. I also have a master's in health education.
Okay. Could you share with the listeners a little bit about the personal life of you? Did you get married during this time or have children or anything like that?
I definitely got married. Wonderful wife of this year will be 42 years. She's written about in a chapter of a book called I Love a Firefighter, that was written about the spouses and children of firefighters and what they go through. It was difficult because she lived in New York City and I was from the island. She really didn't understand the volunteer component until we got married and she moved out. And I was going out the door a lot, and both with the county and my volunteer department, because I maintain my medic certification. So I was also riding an ambulance as a volunteer and doing my duty shifts. Plus then getting involved with national organizations such as the International Association of Fire Chiefs. I was on the original Safety, Health, and Survival Section Board, and that started and set the foundation for where we are today and the work we're doing on health and safety by the IFC. So I believe in getting involved. I also received a fire service fellowship to Harvard University, to the John F. Kennedy School of Government for state and local senior officials. And I had at that in my class, who also received the fellowship, was Mark Giolitucci, who was the head, I think he's retired now, of OES in California, and Mario Trevino, who was a deputy chief, I think, in Seattle, but then ended up being chief in Las Vegas, and then chief of San Francisco. And so we really had a great group, and that was an absolutely phenomenal program.
I just had the recently opportunity to meet Mario, who is a cancer survivor and does a lot of work raising, you know, awareness on early detection and prevention. Great colleague, great person, and great spirit.
Phenomenal person. Both of them were.
He is. Dave, I want to, you know, you mentioned safety, health, and survival, and obviously that's near and dear to myself as I follow in the footstep of folks like yourself. I believe it's been, got 17 years I've been on the board, and going to be running for re-election again this year. But I want to talk a little bit about, you brought an issue to the board, and I know time-wise, I want to be mindful of, you know, where podcast time, but I want to just jump right into this. You brought an issue to the board about a year ago, and it wasn't something really that there was a lot of discussion surrounding prior. And I wonder if you can just talk a little bit about what that issue was and why you brought it forward. And then you and I have kind of partnered and teamed up to do a deep dive on this. So if you can maybe help educate our listeners as to this evolving issue. I'll say it's evolving. Maybe it's been there for a long time and we just haven't looked at it, but share with our listeners what you brought forward and what we're doing with this issue.
Sure. In my position, both as a firefighter, but more initially sort of as an attorney, there were two firefighters that I had to work with. The first one was involved in a explosion and followed by basically a ceiling collapse, but was injured, a head injury, you know, and as well as other injuries that occurred in that explosion and collapse. And today, and he slowly progressed, and today he has a very severe case of Parkinson's disease. Another firefighter from a busy company, had a career where there's some historical backgrounds of being involved in collapses, you know, and had some repetitive head injuries. And he went from being basically totally normal to full-blown Alzheimer's within 6 months, with this called rapid onset Alzheimer's. And he started thinking about it and looking at it and then comparing it to what is going on in the sports world. Initially brought up by the within the NFL, where players who had repetitive head injuries were committing suicide, were hearing voices, had all sorts of behavioral health problems. And I started looking, I said, you know, think about it. As I fight in my fire service career, I've gone down hallways, and at the end of the hallway, we always know this could be a wall, but you can't see it. And all of a sudden, bingo, your head runs into the wall. Ceiling collapses, some are exposed to, you know, the building collapses. Slip and falls with you hit your head. We're not talking about the head trauma of sitting in the kitchen with at the table and another firefighter comes up behind you and smacks you in the head. No, we're talking about that line of duty injuries of repetitive head injuries. And I believe that there is a causal relationship to Parkinson's disease, dementia / Alzheimer's, and CTE, which is chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And that's the one that was first studied by Boston University, which has since created a CTE Institute. And that was for football players in the NFL. And if you see what happens today in the NFL, they do, the guy gets his bell rung on the field, he's immediately on sidelines, goes into a concussion protocol. We get our bells rung and we just go back and do what we have to do. And there's no report of it. There's no anyone watching out for that, you know, and say, hey, I got to pull you off the line. You just had your bell rung. Look at you. You're glary eyed. That, you know, within the sports world, we know it went from the NFL, it's in the NHL now, it's in college sports, and it's in youth sports, high school sports, where there are concussion protocols being run on scene. Early identification of that and documentation is critical so that, you know, we can get the person the medical care and assistance as necessary so we could put them back online faster and not let them experience what some of the other players have had. Now, it's my, and this is only conjecture, totally, you know, unsupported at this point, that we may have, we know we have an epidemic of suicides in the fire service. And I wonder, looking at the NFL, which also had that high suicide rate, from the trauma that they experienced, and at that time, the trauma, that disease process, the CTE, was only identifiable on autopsy. So we don't want to get to that point, but we want to get to the point that we now would say on a fire scene, run a concussion protocol on somebody, look, and if they are, yes, they will be coming offline temporarily so we could get them the right care medically and possibly psychologically and observe them. And so we could get them back online. It'll be a cost savings to fire departments because we won't have persons out. It'll increase safety because we won't have a firefighter who may be a little off because of that head injury. He had a concussion, unreported. No one saw anything or said anything. He never said anything. And yet an hour later, he may be on the line with somebody or in the building and still may be a little dazed and affected by that head injury. So I brought that forward to the International Association of Fire Chief Safety and Health section, and a lot of interest. So Todd and I have been working on this and expanding it. All the major national fire organizations, once we brought it to their attention, there was no hesitation for them to jump into this. In addition, we have three major universities with a Firefighter Safety Institutes and some other international data groups who all jumped on board on this to thinking that there is something that could be really helpful to firefighters that will protect their health, their safety, and well-being.
Yeah, Dave, that was, I think you've heard me say this, and for our listeners, just in my 34th year in fire service circles, and I can't recall many times when, as we pursue a fire prevention and safety grant to look at this issue and develop some resources and awareness, but to see, as you mentioned, the fire service just coalesce together around this issue, the IFF, the IFC, National Volunteer Fire Council, National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, the safety officers, Our U.S. fire administrator before she was appointed was well involved in coordinating some of our research community on this. So it's certainly, I think, when we come together as a service, we're going to achieve greater results. And it tells me when that many players come to the table so early that I think you're on to a need that is probably anecdotal, we know is out there. We just need to define it and refine our resources. So as a board member, thanks for bringing that forward. And I know Donnie's in not only has firefighting in his family, but military service. And, you know, I look at some of our combat veterans in the head trauma and associated behavioral health findings. So I think we're going to find, that we've got an issue in fire service with brain trauma. And it's my hope that by you bringing this forward, we'll have a bunch of experts that will help us develop resources and in many cases, maybe take some of those that are already out there. I know the VA has some screening tools for brain injury and adapt them to the fire service. So for our listeners, this is something in your department, stay tuned. If you are not looking at this, it might be something that you want to take a look at. I know we've identified at least one department that has a concussion protocol that they use. And we're taking a look at that and how that can be refined and perhaps made national. So really an issue I don't think we've heard a lot about, but my sense tells me we're gonna be hearing a lot about it here shortly. So thanks for all the leadership on this issue, Dave.
My passion has always been the fire service. And I think that you've heard me say that in the way I express things. I love the fire service. I love the firefighters. And you know, it's important that we take care of our members. And that is to me critical. Looking forward and to our listeners who are out there, we are going to be initiating some surveys, anonymous surveys. While we're working, we already have a commitment from a career department. We are going to be looking for some volunteer departments because we want to gather both ends of the spectrum. And so if you are a volunteer chief and would like your department to do an anonymous surveys, 5 questions, 6 questions, I can't remember exactly. Very simple, circle the answer. And so we could start putting together some type of look at what is actually happening in the fire service. No member will ever be identified and no department will be identified, but we need to start putting that information together. And one of the problems we've had with this and is that both career and volunteer is, you get hit in the head, you don't go out and report it to anybody. Even if you got, slightly knocked unconscious for a second or two, or a little dazed, or, your vision's a little blurred, you don't go out and say, hey, I got hit in the head and look, this is what's happening. And therefore, we're not self-reporting, and that's a problem. We need to start looking at that issue of self-reporting, or where an officer or another member sees that firefighter dazed, hit his head, and somewhat dazed or not the normal self. And we need to document. And then even if they get in the head and hit in the head, and they are their normal selves, it doesn't hurt to document because that repetitive injuries is what the key word is, repetitive. And it could be a single injury, but more repetitive. And I just recently looked at some stuff and we're looking at different articles, boxing. Reading some information where they're now applying this to boxing. And we've seen some famous boxers repetitively hit in the head and what their mental or physical status is currently?
Yes, certainly widespread implications, and even with regards to our PPE. You know, I had one of our stakeholders, and I think I missed one, and I'd be remiss. You know, we also just recently received support for this initiative and grant from the NFPA and IFC's Metro Chiefs, which are the about 135 of the largest metropolitan fire departments and leadership in the country. So they've signed on board, but this ultimately may impact even helmet design, structure, personal protective equipment. So
that's what I was wondering. I was going to jump in, was thinking that, you know, with the reporting, which is great place to start, right, to get the data and all that. And but we're still going to hit ourselves in the head. Things are going to fall on us, right? So I was wondering about that. What could this turn into then? How do we start preventing some of this with a helmet that can take the blow a little bit more and things like that? So are those talks going on now or too soon?
Actually, they're not going on now, but I think you've seen over the year, when I started, we had no helmet liners. You know, my head touched the bottom of the helmet. You know, there was no liner or, you know, absorbing impact materials, and that has progressed over the years. But you know, it's one of the things we will have to look at. Not initially. Initially, we have to look, do a literature review, do those comparisons, build a database, and so on. But this is not going to be a short-term project. This is going to be a multi-year project, maybe 5, 10, 15 years down the road as we, you know, move forward and see different issues. And the helmets may be fine today, or maybe there will be improvements made. That or we'll be able to work with the helmet manufacturers, and they'll be able to work with us to make those improvements if we feel that will occur. But the biggest issue right now is that firefighters are getting repetitively hit in the head, and there is head and brain trauma that occurs, and that brain trauma is significant. The other issue is, you know, firefighters are not stay at home, sit on the couch people. They're active. They're playing hockey. They're playing, you know, they belong to the football team and the fire department and so on. So there are other aspects where they may have some type of head trauma. And, you know, we have to look at how that is associated with their jobs. And is there any type of effect that goes on there? I know when I played lacrosse, I played football, and I wrestled in college. I got my share of, you know, beaten in the head. And, but those things occur, and firefighters are active. So we know we have to also look at that.
I think you summed it up beautifully, Dave. This is going to be an ongoing, long-term project, and not just to, you know, develop resources, better understand it, but, you know, the tentacles of this are going to be far-reaching, my sense tells me, as this evolves. So for listeners that maybe are listening and want to get involved in supporting this initiative project, how would you suggest the best way for them to do that is?
Well, I think, you know, as I mentioned, we're going to be looking in particular for, well, actually career and volunteer fire departments will help us with the initial data collecting and what our current status of firefighters. You know, have they, you know, and we want them to fill out this form and anonymously, and then just submit it to us so we could start building some type of database and looking at what firefighters are actually experiencing. So I think I don't have the contact. I don't know, Todd, where who they should contact within this organization or off this podcast or directly to us. I'll let you
bring that up. I think, you know, for our listeners, as Dave said, there'll be an opportunity, you know, to participate in some survey data collection. So be on the lookout for that. We are going to need, you know, a large net of information from the fire service. So that will be an opportunity. And for those that may be members of the International Association of Fire Chiefs or considering, you can be a company officer as well. We have a company officer section, but consider looking at joining the Safety, Health, and Survival section. That's where this project emanated from and is driving it. And we'd love to have your talent and resources as part of the effort to look at this issue. So stay tuned on this one. It's one I'm glad we were able to get it up on folks' radar screen listening. And if you've been in the service for any length of time, you're probably sitting there saying to yourself, yeah, this is an issue. So we want to come together as one and figure out how best to tackle it like we do so well with other areas of our health and safety.
Is there an email that they, if they want to get involved, at least in the survey component, is there an email that they we should use? Should we use Kevin's?
You know, I think some, since this came from the section, maybe we can use Taylor's. So T Munday @ifc.org. And Taylor's our staff liaison to Safety, Health, and Survival from the IFC. So she'll be able to shoot an email, be able to route it to the best resource, whether that's Dave, myself, or you know, some of the IFC staff that's helping support this project. So again, we appreciate everyone's interest in this initiative, and stay tuned. I'm sure you'll be reading and hearing more about this in the near future.
And for those listening, if you did not quite get that email, it'll be in the show notes on DonnieHutchinson.com.
Fantastic. We appreciate everyone's interest in wanting to be involved. It's part of the solution is having the more heads we have together working on the same resolution of an issue, the greater the outcome success is. So, Dave, I know we're coming up on quarter to the hour. We've been about 45 minutes. I want to be mindful not only of your time. I know we've got a tee time on Saturday, so I know you need to get out and hit the driving range and practice to keep up. And I was joking before we started, Dave's down here in South Florida with myself and has become our foursome on Saturday golf. So he survives my hacking. And I joke, I usually have to play with an attorney or a physician because I usually unfortunately hit something or break something. So, but no, all kidding aside, it's great to have you on. And I know with your wealth of knowledge, we'll look to have you back as episode number two guest in upcoming episodes. So I want to say on behalf of Donnie and myself, thanks for sharing your work, your career, and where your efforts are currently.
Well, thank you, Todd and Donnie. I appreciate the time. And, you know, obviously my passion is that firefighters stay safe.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.